listening to Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702-727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It sure is. And we've got Marshall Barnes, a man who has been investigating the Philadelphia experiment for 3 years. He will address Columbus State Community College on this, coming up May 2nd at 2:45 in the afternoon. We've got him just ahead of that telling you what he's going to tell them. And he thinks the experiment did occur, and so if you have questions, we're about to go to the phones here. And it's going to be very interesting. This is sort of pre-Mother's Day. And so we've got a couple of Mother's Day-like things for you. For example, don't you think you ought to send your mom flowers on Mother's Day? Surely you don't want your mom disappointed in you. Thoughtless child. You don't want to be thought of as a thoughtless child, do you? Of course not. So get on the horn, not Gabriel's, the telephone type horn, and call Absolutely Fresh Flowers, and you will not suffer that fate or be thought of that way. Little pressure there. Absolutely Fresh Flowers is the best deal on flowers in America, period. They grow miniature carnations, fields full miniature carnations, and when you call them, they cut you a flower order that you just simply won't believe. It'll absolutely knock her socks off, I promise. Coming with these miniature carnations, beautiful as they are, is a little note from you, handwritten note. Who does that sort of thing anymore? With your message, I love you, Mom, whatever, and your name at the bottom, and it's all delivered by FedEx just before Mother's Day. You've got to beat the rush, though, and boy, is there going to be a rush. So I suggest you call now. The full price is $42.95. $42.95 takes care of it. The number to call right now is 1-800-562-6438. That's 1-800-562-6438. Write it down now, 1-800-562-6438, and here's yet another idea. We all know there's nothing like a rose. Now dip that rose in gold, and you've got a remarkable, memorable gift. That's right, a perfect rose, complete with stem and leaves, dipped into 24-karat gold and frozen in time for all time. As we approach Mother's Day, the perfect gold rose moment, the American Gold Rose Company is back with their popular collection of everlasting flowers. First, their beautiful classic rose, priced at $49.95. 11 inches long. It comes in a formal black and gold box. Then the Hollywood Elite. For just $65, you can send your mom a long stem gold rose, 17 inches long, delivered right to her door in a gold presentation box. Or just order the original rose. Simple, no leaves, but dipped in gold, $39.95. All perfect for Mother's Day or any special occasion. But listen, this incredible early Mother's Day offer. Listen carefully. For just 1 week, if you buy any two roses right now, you receive a free genuine four-leaf clover dipped in gold, a perfect charm for any necklace. You also get their sweetheart rose brooch, a real rose dusted with gold. The two valued at over $40. The American Gold Rose Company. Call them now at 1-800-458-7134. That's 1-800-458-7134. From Alaska or Hawaii, it's area code 918-687-7574. Back to Ohio now, and Marshall Barnes, who's been looking into the Philadelphia experience. experiment for 3 years solid. Marshall, this fax, a quick comment from you, and then I'd like to go to the phones if we can. Hi, Art. I personally knew Carlos Alene, A-L-E-N-E, who was involved in the Philadelphia experiment. He studied with Einstein in preparation for the experiment. In fact, he showed me photos of him and Einstein together. His accounts of what happened during the experiment were incredible. Please ask your guest about Carlos. I wish I had more time to go into more detail. Do you know anything about that?
Now, he says, how do you spell the last name of this guy?
A-L-E-N-E.
Yeah, I don't know about him at all. There was the guy, that sounds awfully suspicious, of like Carlos Allende. It was the guy, you start the whole thing, but that guy never worked with Einstein. So if this fact that you receive is correct and it's not some kind of goof up with the name, then, you know, I'd love to find out more about this gentleman because I don't know anything about him.
All right, good. Let's take a couple of questions from the audience and see how you feel those.
Uh-huh.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hello.
Hello, this is Mike from Detroit.
Hi, Mike.
I got a question for your guest.
All right.
How does magnetics work in space? If you know anything about that.
How do magnetics work in space?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the Philadelphia experiment, so why don't you
know? No, but I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
Well, I would imagine they work just fine.
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
did you possibly tap into another planet's magnetic field and travel at the speed?
No, I don't believe that at all. Absolutely not. In fact, I don't believe in the space warping thing where you generate a gravitational field strong enough to, like, basically bend space-time.
Right.
So that, you know, it's that kind of the warped sheet of paper effect. Because what happens to all the other planets and all the other things that are in between points B and, you know, C or whatever?
In other words, jumping, you're talking about jumping across the bent piece of paper.
Right. You know, what happens to everything that's in the bend? It doesn't make any sense.
All right.
You know, it just doesn't, and I don't buy it. No one's been able to address that particular fact.
Green cheese and bologna, then.
Yeah.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hi.
How you do?
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Pasadena, California. In fact, I'm in the military base that Einstein used to work out of.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, it's a Naval Ordnance Center on Foothill Boulevard in Pasadena. And they made rockets and torpedoes here during World War II.
All right.
And rumor over here is that they were making nuclear torpedoes, which they tested in Port Chicago. Do you know anything about that?
No, the closest thing to that I've heard is that they there was some kind of a nuclear accident that happened in Philadelphia, but that happened after the Philadelphia experiment supposedly happened.
Okay.
But the other thing I want to mention is the fact that Einstein, he may have visited the base that you're at, but his real base of operation was Princeton. That's where he would go from, like, that area over to Philadelphia. But he may have also been at where you are, too. I don't know.
It's funny you used to say that because he used to teach at Caltech, which is right down the street.
Right. Well, his actual base of operations is Princeton.
All right.
He may have gone to Caltech. I mean, like I said, I mean, because, like, I'm... You know, I can see him going back and forth, but I do know that his actual base of operations was in Princeton.
All right. It was said that... there were dire warnings given by Tesla as this experiment continued. Do you believe that to be true?
I don't know. I mean, I have no evidence to support it. I mean, my thing is, I've got an open mind, but I want to see some kind of evidence to back up all this stuff, and that's why I'm a researcher. I try to dig it up.
All right,
now,
fine. Then let me ask you about that. Before the news, I said, give me, if you can, your best evidence that this experiment did occur.
Well, my best evidence is that it was possible, not that it actually occurred. I can't prove conclusively that it happened, but I can prove that the Office of Naval Research is lying when they say this stuff is only possible. You know, experiments of this kind are only possible in the realm of science fiction, because I've got all the evidence to back up how you would go about doing the experiment. The only thing we got to figure out is the exact nature of, you know, the voltages and the current density and all that kind of stuff for the electromagnetic fields and everything. But
would you like an opportunity to try and duplicate it?
Sure, absolutely. That and a few other things, as a matter of fact. In fact, I know of a couple of people where, you know, after I get a few other things out of the way, we're talking about trying to figure out a way to actually do it for real. Not with on a large scale, like a, you know, naval destroyer, but on a small scale, yeah, absolutely.
What would you endeavor to prove?
I want to see if we can do it again. You know, that's what I want to do.
Well, what about the potential biological problems?
Well, I mean, obviously we would take safeguards. And again, I said, well, I'm not talking about doing something that's on a large scale. We would do something like let's see if we can make a pop can, you know, invisible that way. You know,
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? As opposed to, like, you know, a whole destroyer or something like that. So, but we would obviously take precautions. There's no question about that, particularly because we know that working with those kind of electromagnetic fields can be dangerous.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hi.
Hi. Hey, I'm calling from St. Paul, Minnesota, KSTP area.
Yes, sir.
Yes. You previously mentioned Dr. Hawking. In A Brief History of Time, he talks about no such thing as absolute space. So then from that particular premise, we can conclude that if the ship disappears, that it is only relatively disappearing. That is to say that it is still there, yet it is not there. You can't visually see it. Optic, hence the term optic, as you've been using all night long. Now, knowing that, all it is creating is an illusion. Would it still create a depression in the water? Would it still be visible as an anomaly in the horizon?
Yeah, okay. Now, the depression of the water, yes. In fact, all the witness accounts say that you could still see the outline of where the boat was in the water, but you couldn't see the boat.
Hmm.
And in terms of, like, what you were talking about, like, you know, it disappeared but it was still really there, that's what the optical invisibility thing was about. The teleportation aspect of it, which has been, some people say it was a mistake, some people say it was done on purpose, that's a whole other part of the story where that's more extreme, where that something happened and the ship actually teleported. In other words, it was no longer in the water at all, and it went to some other location, and then it came back again. That's another part of the story. But the initial invisibility factor, yeah, it was still in the water. You could see the depression in the water, but you couldn't see the boat.
Excellent.
All right, thank you very much. Marshall, what do we know about the eyewitnesses? What is the best eyewitness testimony regarding Philadelphia?
Well, that's where things get really goofy, so to speak, and that's what the skeptics like to latch on to. The skeptics, all the skeptics have done has basically attacked the witnesses and indulged in character assassination. And basically my whole thing, though, is that, you know, we're talking about a time in history where you didn't have Star Trek, you didn't have Star Wars, you didn't have all the kinds of sci-fi things that we have seen.
How many witnesses are there, Marshall?
I mean, you're talking about Carlos Allende, who's the main primary witness. He was only the main one, unless you want to start to include Al Bielek, you know. But Carlos Allende was the main one, but William Moore says that there was a few other individuals, like this guy by the name of Silverman, who was actually a sailor on the boat. There's the guy who he gave the pseudonym to of Reinhardt, Dr. Reinhardt, who supposedly actually was one of the scientists that worked on part of the experiment. They have all these kind of people, which are impossible to track down, or they're already dead. For example, Carlos Allende, he died a couple of years ago. But the thing about it is, Carlos Allende never changed his story. Carlos Allende never tried to really make any money off his story. He never did a movie of the week. He never did a book. He never did a lecture tour.
Mm.
He didn't capitalize on it anyway. He was a recluse most of the time, and a lot of times he talked about he was afraid of what the Navy might do to him, okay? So you've got a guy who's never seen any of the kind of things that we've seen in terms of optical effects, and yet he describes accurately what kind of visual effects would happen if he tried to do this experiment. To me, that's incredible. I mean, what are the odds that he's going to make this stuff up and accurately describe exactly what would have happened if it would have worked?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
No, right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hi.
Hi, how you doing tonight, Art?
Fine.
Hey, I had the opportunity to talk to Al Bielek down here for about 40 minutes at a lecture that he was given.
Right.
And I know he had, like, he was telling me there was four big generators on that ship.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my question is, you do plan on duplicating the experiment. Now, I wanted to, about 2 years from now, I'll be ready. And there is a way to mask the EMF field, in which he said that if you don't mask it, you'll be visited.
What's that mean?
So, in other words, there's people out there, there's a branch of the government out there, he says, that looks for EMF fields.
Oh, gotcha, I understand.
Yeah, and what they do is they'll investigate it, and you need to mask it a little bit.
Well, I'm sure that's probably correct. If you create an EMF field, it's going to be detected by satellite. It's going to be detected by all kinds of people who are going to want to come and find out what you're doing.
And not only that, if you do it in the wrong place, it's going to mess up with people's TV reception and, you know, the FCC app.
Then you're really in trouble. I'm sure that's true. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Where are you, please?
I'm in Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, all right. Go ahead.
Hello, Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
My name's David. I want to make a comment and then ask you a question. I believe, first of all, in UFOs, and I know that's not the subject, but it came up in your discussion about the stealth planes.
But not with respect to UFOs, it did not.
Well,
it came up with respect to real research and real aircraft that exist now.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about. When I was growing up, my father was a test pilot, and he worked on a lot of black projects, which I've only found out in later years. One time around 1973, we were on an Air Force base where there are a lot of those kind of projects going on even now. And we were walking at night to the store, and we saw bright lights in the sky, a pattern of blue lights, and they seemed to hover for a while and then took off instantaneously out of sight. And as soon as we got to the store, my father used the payphone to place a call to report that sighting. And I know that if it had been any one of the black projects that were going on at that time in that area, that wouldn't have happened. And that has always made me somewhat of a believer, although I'm skeptical about a lot of the reports. But anyway,
but a believer in what?
A believer that there are machines piloted by someone from somewhere else.
Well, now see, that's where you lose me. Why does it have to be from somewhere else? It might be, but I would say the odds are better that it's some sort of black project. And Marshall, that's what you talked about earlier, that you saw something as well that in effect blinked out. And it would make sense to me that if the Philadelphia experiment occurred, they wouldn't drop that technology. There's no way in hell. They'd continue the research. And if you allowed that many years of research, I would imagine today we can literally cloak. Would you imagine that to be true?
Yeah, exactly. I've heard other stories about it that were in publications, like I think it was James Defense Weekly or something like that, where supposedly they have some kind of a unmanned flying vehicle that can change the way it reflects light so that it can cloak itself.
Mm-hmm. A lot of what Al Bielek said made sense. The magnetic fields, the rotating RF fields, all of that made sense to me. He even talked about what frequency, VHF frequency, the fields were operating at. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And even some of the stranger parts of this story make sense, because there's all this background information. If anyone reads, like, the Montauk Project books, particularly the second one, Adventures in Synchronicity, there's all this weird background stuff that's connected to the Montauk Project and the base and the land and all this other kind of stuff that, you know, seems to lead credence to the idea that there was something going on. I know that the actual nature of the Montauk Project, that makes total complete sense. Where I run into problems in terms of being able to back anything up about it is when they start talking about aliens being involved and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, because you're not going to be able to find any kind of evidence to back that up. But in terms of the concepts that they were trying to deal with, then yeah, I see those concepts popping up all the time, like I mentioned before, in some of the even more mainstream scientific magazines like Discovery Magazine and Scientific American.
All right, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hi.
Hi, Art. I just wanted to say that when I was in boot camp at Fort Knox, Kentucky, back in 1976, I seen something that was like a light that ran through the sky in a triangle pattern very fast and would come to an abrupt stop. And it wasn't just a triangle pattern. It moved in different patterns, but mainly a triangle. And then it shot off, and I was in boot camp, and me and my roommate were watching this, and I told him we should go down and report that. And he was too afraid to go down there. The drill sergeants were mean. And anyways, I went down and I reported that. And then, needless to say, they just sent me back to my room. But I am still convinced to this day that it wasn't anything that, that flies in our skies.
All right, thank you. Well, any technology that we don't understand is as magic to us, whether it comes from our own government or it comes from elsewhere. Mm-hmm. If we don't understand it, it appears to be magic. If something blinks out or appears to disappear, to us, that is as magic, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the typical response to it, you know. So,
I'm sure some of the optical cloaking that you talked about earlier, if somebody were to observe it, to them, it would be, as you said, a ghost ship.
Right.
Or magic. It would appear
right.
as magic.
And well, actually, I'll tell you a little quick funny story about that. When we first started messing around with this invisibility stuff, we actually started to, when we would see things start to look transparent, that we knew were there, and we knew were solid, we actually started to feel like, you know, get a sick feeling in our stomach, you know. It was strange. It actually had a physical effect on us.
Disorienting, yeah, I'm sure
yeah,
it would be.
It was weird, because it was just weird seeing something that our minds were telling us, this is impossible, even though we wanted to believe it, that it would work. I mean, it was just so strange. So now it doesn't have an effect on me now. But I remember back when we first started doing this back in 94, it was, and we're not even talking about electromagnetic fields, we're just talking about seeing an optical illusion.
Yes, of
being
course.
Able to create that. And that was really weird.
I can understand. It would probably disorient you, nauseate you, possibly.
Yeah, it was getting close to that, exactly.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Thanks so much for the program. Marshall, I wonder, did you listen to Dr. Mitchell? Are you aware of him?
I don't think so, no.
Apollo astronaut Edgar Mitchell that I had on the
phone. Oh, okay. No, I didn't hear him. No, I can't get the show where I'm at, so I didn't hear it.
Well, he was on Art's show, and it was a magnificent show.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, sir, but there's no reference for him since he didn't happen to hear it. Marshall, hold on. We'll do another 30 minutes of
okay.
Of calls and explanation. Marshall Barnes has been looking into the Philadelphia experiment for 3 solid years. He would like to repeat it. He believes it occurred and is in the business of separating the myth of it from what he considers to be the reality. He will, as a matter of fact, give an address on this to Columbus State Community College on the 2nd of May. He will say the U.S. Office of Naval Research has been covering all this up for many, many years. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Art Bell. I sure wish I knew what I could tell you about Coast to Coast AM that would cause you to listen. About all I can say is, I never know what it's going to be about. Current topics, things that are strange and unusual, things that people in the middle of the night like to talk about. It's spontaneous, it's on-screen calls, it's unpredictable, so that's about all I can say. Join us, take a listen. It's here, right here, all night long. Hi, this is Art Bell. Coming up this week on Dreamland, Judy Pope Zion. Don't want to miss it. She's author of Last Waltz of the Tyrants and UFOs and the Nature of Reality. Sounds like hardcore Dreamland stuff, doesn't it? Well, we've always told you it won't fit in a box. And if it won't, it'll be on Dreamland right here this week.
Well, hello there. I am Roger Fredenberg, radio's regular guy. And if you haven't listened to the program yet, then you're probably missing out on a lot of truthful things that you should be hearing about, talking about, thinking about, sharing with your friends. Tune in to learn all about what's going on in this crazy country of ours, will you? I am Roger Fredenberg, radio's regular guy, and I'll talk to you just as soon as you call.
Fertility is on the rise, so is the use of chemicals on our foods, in our foods packaging. A correlation? Well, that's a topic we'll investigate with Diane Romanowski, author of the new bestseller, Our Stolen Future, right here on Here's to Your Health this week. Join us. Good health is as close as your radio on Here's to Your Health.
If you're overweight, the Catabolic Diet is the most effective, unbelievable program ever created based on over 100 foods that remove calories from your body. Did you know that every food that enters your body requires various body organs such as liver, spleen, stomach, digestive juices to complete digestion? For example, an ordinary piece of cake that has 300 calories may require 25 calories to complete digestion, but a catabolic food that contains 50 calories may require 100 calories to complete digestion, actually removing fat from your body. Diets based on catabolic foods result in staggering weight losses. According to the doctor that created the program, the diet works three times faster than starvation. One lady written up in the Journal of Medicine actually lost 256 pounds in a matter of a month.
To order the catabolic diet for only $19.95, call 1-800-292-2060 to finally lose those unwanted pounds. Call 1-800-292-2060.
That's not exactly the kind of music I'm known for, but I don't have to play it to love it myself. Hi, I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter, with a message about making choices. You can always choose between your Beethoven and Bo Diddley. That's discriminating taste. But don't choose between people because of their race, religion, age, gender, national origin, or disability. That's discrimination, and it's against the law.
On the Wild Card Line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Once again, here I am. My guest is Marshall Barnes, subject to the Philadelphia Experiment. Hello, Art. Please ask Marshall the following question. There was a supposedly prominent investigator into the Philadelphia experiment, maybe 5 or 10 years after the experiment, who arranged an appointment with a reporter to release evidence regarding it. When the reporter arrived, he found the investigator dead for no apparent reason, no evidence around. Did Marshall ever come across this incident or hear about it?
No. I'll bet. The original researcher into the Philadelphia experiment was a gentleman by the name of M.K. Jessup. And Jessup was actually contacted by the Office of Naval Research, the two officers that worked for them that got the Office of Naval Research connection going in the first place. And they were asking him about this copy of his book that they received that had these crazy annotations in it. And it was Jessup who realized it came from Carlos Allende, who was the same guy who was talking about, you know, the boat disappearing. So I don't know if you're, the fact that you got was in reference to that, but that's the only thing I know about a gentleman who ended up dying, because he did die of an apparent suicide. M.K. Jessup did, although some people believe he was murdered.
All right.
But that's about all I know about that.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hello.
Yes, I guess I take exception to the fact that perhaps that ship moved from the space where it was at, because if it did, how could it end up back in the same space? As one of your previous callers identified, the fact is that there is no absolute space in the universe. It's the same way if you're playing ping pong on a train, the ball bounces back and forth on the table. If you're standing off to the side of the train, the ping pong ball is going to move 40 feet in a matter of seconds or so if you were able to look at it. Now, how would one do the math to come back to the very same virtual space that one occupied previously if you have changed from that space? If you ask me, something like that to occur as a result of an EMF rotating, whatever you described it, however you described it, how could you get back into the same place?
Well, I mean, if you want to be picky about it, I mean, I didn't say it was the exact same spot. You know, and there's been some discussion. For example, there's a guy from Australia, not Stan Deo, but I can't remember the guy's name right off the top of my head, but he talked about that, how you could calculate certain things having to do with the arc of the Earth and all this kind of stuff. There's a certain kind of geometry that he talked about that would have been involved that would enable something like that to take place.
So it wouldn't necessarily be the precise same space.
Let's call it what it is. You know, we're not talking, when you say like the precise same space, I mean, what we're talking about is like, you know, a certain spot in the water, okay? I mean, it's when you start talking about space and stuff like that, it sounds like it's something larger than what it really is. What we're talking about is going from one location to another location and back to the other location again.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You know.
All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hello.
Yeah, this is Robert from Missouri.
Yes, Robert.
Let me turn down my...
Turn it off.
Yeah, there we go. I'm with Army Intelligence currently. I was involved in the SR-71 program back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I got to review a lot of the material on the Philadelphia experiment when it was declassified.
But when was it declassified?
When was it declassified?
In the 70s. It's in the Library of Congress right now.
Okay.
As far as I know, at least that's what I was told when I reviewed the material, that that's where it was going. So, but I saw a lot of the photographs, reports. Let's see, all the medical information on the survivors of the experiment, and it was pretty interesting reading. One of the things that they mentioned in there that was created by this electromagnetic field that they generated. Was that the atomic frequency was changed in the ship and the personnel on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And that when they started to shut everything down, when they kind of phased back in or whatever you want to call it, that's what, when, you know, some of the crew members actually meshed with the metal of the ship.
Now, that makes sense.
Right.
That makes sense.
Now, let's get back to this declassification stuff. You were told that it's declassified, and it's in the Library of Congress somewhere?
Yeah, that's what he was told. He's not here now. I want to ask you.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. I want to ask you. You've obviously pursued as far as you can trying to get whatever official writings there are on this. What do you meet with? Do you meet with a dead silence, blacked out papers, no response at all?
I didn't give it to the government at all, period. What I did was I did exactly the opposite. What I did was I tried to find out the scientific stuff about it. Did it scientifically make any kind of sense? And I checked naval history, and like, you know, whether the ship existed and all that kind of stuff. But I never tried to give it to the government itself because of the simple fact that, hey, I can't believe anything they tell me because they're going to lie about it. I mean, that's why I laugh at Stanton Friedman and people like that that send in these Freedom of Information Act requests. Mm. So they get back these papers, right? And they have all these major sections blacked out. But there is no there's no guarantee that even the stuff that isn't blacked out is real.
I absolutely agree with that.
You know,
I really do.
How are you going to know?
I've always thought they're damn well, Freedom of Information Act or not, if it's really secret, you're not going to get anything back on it, period.
Exactly. And that's why, for example, I'll check naval records. Like, for example, there was a guy that Jacques Vallée supposedly has as his witness, okay? And I'm not going to go into all the detail about, but I checked out that guy's whole story. And when I checked out his story, I was looking at naval records that were published, that were already in libraries, that weren't, you know, in other words, they were already released, and it was a situation where the government could fudge something after the fact, you understand?
Yes.
And so those are the kind of things I looked at, like the stuff where I found the photographs of, like, you know, the German battleships and all that kind of stuff. You know, those are the kind of things I looked at in terms of records and histories and whatnot.
Yeah, I think your investigative approach is a different one, and that's why I find it interesting. You came at this in a whole different way. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hello.
Yeah, Art, this is Brian from Puyallup.
Hi, Brian.
I was in the Navy for some time, and I had a lot of friends that were in the intelligence community in the Navy and spent a lot of time on aircraft carriers. And I had a lot of them tell me that there was ways of pumping RF through the ship. I don't know, they had a maze of tubes that were kind of square gray tubes they had on the ship that they said could actually change the configuration of the ship as it would appear on radar. Not, you know, not, we didn't disappear or anything like that, of course, but they said that they had ways that they could pump RF through the ship to where it would change the configuration, where it would end up looking like four or five different boats, or it would look like a trawler or a cargo ship.
When was this? When was this?
This was 81 through 85.
That is an outgrowth of what allegedly they were trying to do with the Philadelphia experiment, some of the radar stuff.
Right.
Because they were going for both optical and radar invisibility, and because radar was big in World War II. I mean, that's where all the developments in radar really started to take off.
Right.
And we began ended up with some of the best radar stuff because we had the British help us out, and they're the ones that made most advances on radar, at least initially. The Germans joined the game too, but the British beat them out. I mean, they were just better at it.
Right.
So, but what you're describing is an outgrowth of what the Philadelphia experiment was trying to do, one part of it at least.
Right, and then they do optical stuff too, like they had a couple cranes they kept on the boat. They'd move out in the middle of the deck, so if it saw optically, it appeared as though it had cranes on the deck, like a cargo ship or something like that, from an optical point of view. But
The Germans used to do similar kind of things. Well, they actually had phony smokestacks that they would burn oil in so that it would make it like a destroyer look like it was some other kind of a ship.
Right.
So, the whole camouflage and, like, you know, fooling people about what you really are thing, I mean, that's been around. And that's why that Philadelphia experiment as an optical thing was the next logical step. They'd already done everything else you could think of.
All right. I appreciate that. That's exactly right. I mean, I think you lay out a very good case that they had proprietary interest in taking this as far as they could take it. And if they didn't take it this far, then they were being neglectful.
Exactly.
Something's wrong. So they had to have. So I agree with you. I'm sure they're lying about it.
Well, here's the other thing about it, Art. Guess what? Okay, the next phase in World War II was, you know, we're going to be fighting the Japanese in the Pacific, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Japanese didn't have radar. All they had was optical stuff. So if we could make those ships invisible, they couldn't hit us at all. They wouldn't even have to worry about radar. I mean, that would have taken out the opportunity for kamikazes and the whole nine yards. I got that from Lieutenant Commander Raines, who's a public affairs officer for the Navy, the guy who doesn't believe in the Philadelphia experiment, but basically backed up everything I was thinking because he told me histories that made sense with what I figured what was going on.
All right, Marshall, hold it right there. We'll be right back. I don't have to tell you what's happening to telecommunications. It's incredible. It's not just a technical revolution. There's an explosion of opportunity going on, business opportunity. Microtech is one of the premier communications companies that's had the strength and foresight to grab a big chunk of the hot new SMR market, specialized mobile radio. Remember SMR because you're going to be hearing a lot more about it in the future. When it comes to Microtech, the future is now. They've already completed SMR stations in major markets like New York, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Boston. They're ready to build more. While license opportunities last, that's where you come in. If you're willing to make one free phone call, you can discover how a minimum $8,700 participation in the explosive telecommunications industry could return to you $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 or more, plus a yearly income for the rest of your life, and it can be part of your IRA or retirement plan. Of course, you've got to meet some investor qualifications, but if you do, they'll send a free video and all the information you're going to need to make the right decision. Call toll-free 1-800-444-1049. Ensure your financial future. Call 1-800-444-1049. That's 1-800-444-1049.
All right. I've always had great sympathy for people who have allergies. You have to feel sorry for them. You've seen it. Maybe that's you. Runny nose, watery eyes, fits of coughing and sneezing. It's awful. Pathetic, actually. And this is the season. You know it is. Well, now there's Similis on. It's a strange-sounding name, I know, but it's Switzerland's most popular allergy treatment. Here's the best part. It's not only extremely effective, but it's also all natural. No side effects. No drug interactions. Safe even for children. Similis on is actually three products in one. First, it is eye drops that don't sting and burn. Can be used with any contact lenses. Number two, a quick-acting, non-addictive nasal spray. And finally, a natural oral medication, a few drops under the tongue. And allergies are under control, not acting as triggers for something even worse. So, if you don't want to go through it this year, it's just $29.95 plus shipping and handling. Call them 24 hours a day at 1-800-294-5885. That's 1-800-294-5885. Back now to my guest, Marshall Barnes. Marshall, guess who I've got on the line? I've got the fellow who sent the fax.
Uh-huh.
You're in Colorado, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, and you actually had a typo in your fax.
Yes.
And it was not Aline, as is in here, but rather was...
Allende.
Allende.
Right, so you say you have a picture of Allende with Albert Einstein?
I don't actually have the picture, no. I knew Carlos, and he showed me the pictures years ago. And he he had studied with Einstein for a period of time before the experiment.
What did he tell you about the experiment?
Oh, gosh. A lot of things.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, some of the people that were involved actually were missing arms and legs and stuff like that afterwards. He said they were actually there, yet, but they were invisible. The people that were on the ship, he was on the adjacent ship. He actually stuck his arm into the force field that surrounded the ship that was involved. And, I mean, there's just real incredible stuff. And about some of the people meshing with the metal of the ship, you know, he confirmed that too. And
all right.
That a lot of the people that were involved kind of disappeared or were institutionalized or whatever, kind of never to be seen or heard from again.
All right. A lot of that should be traceable in records. In other words, people rarely disappear, and if they do, usually family members and other people try to find them, and there's a big stink. Shouldn't there have been a lot of that, Marshall?
Yeah, the main thing I'm going to have to try to do is see if what records I can find, because the problem with records like that, or particularly with the top secret project, is they can be destroyed. They can be lost. I mean, look what happened with Roswell, for example. Also, it looks like the crew that might have been involved with the experiment was a skeleton crew, which means they weren't really assigned to the boat. They weren't on the boat when it was commissioned. So that's going to be really, nearly impossible to try to track down, although I do plan on trying to do that.
Well, I think that the course of investigation you've taken is a good one. It's approached it from a different angle, as you say. Instead of trying to go after the government, get them to admit what they're not going to admit, take a different tact, and I think that's a good idea. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes. Hi.
Hi, this is Jack in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes, Jack.
I was wondering what became of the ship of Eldridge after World War II.
The Greeks renamed it the Lyon.
Really?
Yeah, and so it was in the Greek Navy or Merchant Marine or something like that. That's what happened to it.
So does it still exist?
Yeah, it supposedly still exists, and the Greeks still have it, although I just seems to me I heard a rumor that now the U.S. has got it back or something. I'm not sure. But, yeah, the boat still existed.
Ooh, that's fascinating. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Marshall Barnes.
Hello, Art. How are you?
Fine.
Yes, Marshall, I have two quick questions for you and a comment. Number one, what magnetic resonance field are you using?
Well, okay, now, I'm not working with that kind of material. I was only testing what effects refraction would have on light and whether or not the refracted light would cause optical mirages like it was described in the experiment, and it does. I have done that. But I didn't deal with electromagnetic field or anything.
Okay. We found through research that by generating a electromagnetic field strong enough, and what we call a Hiker wave.
Hiker?
A Hiker wave.
Okay.
And that's just a little name that some researchers have given it.
Okay.
By turning the wave into itself.
Right, okay,
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Okay. By turning the wave into itself, you create what is called a miniature implosion. Not an explosion, an implosion.
Right.
Which creates the field.
Okay.
Now, the only thing I have a question of is we have not been successful in operating it because the EMF emissions are just horrible.
Who
exactly.
Excuse me for a second. Who is we?
Just an agency that I work for.
Jeez.
And we cannot... the reason the ship had four generators, number one, you have to create a large enough field in order to turn the wave into itself.
Okay.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, the another question I have, too, is...
Wait a minute. Before you ask a question, I've got one. What do you mean by turning a wave in on itself? Technically, how do you accomplish that?
It's very simple. Every form of electrical, magnetic, or any electrical source... is polarized, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. You simply depolarize it, and just you just basically turn it inside out.
Well, 60 cycle current is not polarized.
Well, this is not the field that they're using, though.
Okay.
When you're talking electromagnetics, you have to create a large enough charge. Now, in the Philadelphia experiment years ago, this is basically what they were attempting to pull off.
All right. Marshall, did that make sense to you?
Yeah, he's in the right ballpark. Yeah, I'm with him.
All right.
Because what they supposed to had was at least three fields, okay, that were rotating, and they were feeding into each other. They were electromagnetic fields feeding into each other, and they were rotating in different angles, okay? And that's been part of the story, yeah.
That's right, and that's what we call turning it into itself.
Right.
Wave into itself.
All right, now I understand. I couldn't picture it from a single source.
Which arc creates a implosion?
Okay.
Inside the wave, which would generate the field.
Right.
However, you can't cloak the EMF. There's no way.
Oh, you're not trying to cloak the EMF anyway. In fact, EMF is supposed to be is causing this disruption of the air and the water molecules in the area, and it's salt water is feeding all this material into the field, which adds to the mirage. Basically, it's a lens. You're creating a weird lens around the boat that's going to give you that kind of the right kind of refraction of light to cause the invisibility effect. I mean, putting it in salt water was just like, I mean, it was just perfect because
conductivity.
The fuel to feed into the effect that you want is right all around the boat.
Sure. The conductivity of salt water is
exactly
well understood.
Right.
So, all in all, you're convinced all of this is real, and you're going to lay out all this evidence at Columbus State Community College.
Yeah,
correct?
Not only that, I even have a documentary I have to do. It's called The Quantum Conspiracy from the Philadelphia Experiment. It's a videotape. It's got the video footage of our experiments of light on it. It goes into the background of the Montauk Project and all this other stuff that's associated with it and what it all means for what's going on right now and what's going to happen in the future. And I've also got a book that I'm finishing up now, which should be, I've got a couple publishers interested in it. We haven't locked the deal down on that yet, but it will be also coming out as an audio book. And it's called The Case for the Philadelphia Experiment.
Hmm. Well, do you expect a big crowd for your address?
Probably, because it's a colloquium, and it's going to be a lot of scientists there. In fact, the professor who made the arrangements for me to do it, which, by the way, I presented my hypothesis to him, and that's why it's happening.
I see.
He said, expect a lot of harsh criticism about this and that and this and that. And I said, well, I don't have any problem with it, because my whole point is that what we're discussing, and according to the Office of Naval Research, is impossible, and it's not impossible. And that's why I've got all this evidence. The only thing I don't have are the actual, like, you know, the equations about the strength of the field at this angle and all that kind of stuff.
So you're going to actually demonstrate, at least to some degree, optically, that it is indeed possible.
Oh, yeah. They're going to see it. They're going to see it. And it's weird. When you've never seen anything like this before, and you see it happen. In fact, we leaked out some of this information on the Internet back in 1994, and most of the people on the Internet didn't believe it. They thought it had to be some kind of trick to it, although they didn't see it for themselves. We just leaked out the information that was going on. But when you see it for real, it's like, whoa.
I can believe it. Marshall, it has been a pleasure having you on, and I know you're East Coast time. That means it's, what,
four
almost 4 o'clock
in the morning.
And I've got you a couple of days ahead of this, so we now know pretty much what they're going to know after they listen to you. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Except they're going to have the visual aids, as
exactly.
It were.
Exactly.
Marshall, it has been a pleasure. I thank you. I'm in a continuing quest, so stay in touch.
I will.
I'm absolutely fascinated by the whole Philadelphia experiment.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend. Good night.
All right.
That's Marshall Barnes on a quest, believes the Philadelphia experiment absolutely occurred. And I like his line of research. All right. We're going to pause here, and we'll come back and get into general open line talk radio. And I've got a couple of kind of special things for you. So stay right where you are. You're listening to the American CBC Radio Network.
It's the hottest show of its kind on radio. It examines two areas of human experience at the edge. Two questions that demand a verdict. Is there life after death, and are we alone in the universe? I'm Art Bell. The program is Dreamland.
Things not seen at the end of vision can only be experienced on Dreamland. Weekends on CBC and TRN.
Are you one of the record number of taxpayers who will face an IRS audit this year?